Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. It is the 9th of October, 2019. And the first thing I want to mention, as I often do, is to thank my donors for their generosity. As some of you know, a few months ago, I lost my health insurance and my hot water. But I suppose that's part of the ascetic life that those of us who oppose the system have to live. It's occasionally galling to see the incompetence and the ignorant and the hypocritical in these great jobs we're going to talk about here in a minute, whether it be in academia or in government, doing extremely well in all respects. But we know from people like Stuss and Solzhenitsyn that those people are everywhere. And sitting in a prison camp, as those men were, while the equivalent of those sort of people today were doing well in the party, it, of course, creates a tremendous amount of resentment and hatred. At the same time, I wonder if, on occasion, they don't envy us, or at least envy someone like me, because despite living this kind of a life, I have far more freedom than they do. I'm able to say as I please. I'm able to speak the truth. As I've said many times, I don't claim any abstract right of freedom of speech. That certainly exists, but that's not really the point. The point is that I'm correct. I'm factually correct, as far as I know, logically correct. And that's far more important than anything else. Never underestimate the power of a clear conscience. Now, you can't pay your bills with a clear conscience. I've tried that, and I was unsuccessful. However, it's psychologically very, very powerful and should be taken very seriously. And the only reason I'm able to do any of that is because of my donors and my supporters. Now, today we're going to talk about and it's really incumbent on me to talk about the messiness in Ukrainian situation. I don't normally do current events, and this will not necessarily be a current events show, but we do have to talk about the situation with the president, both of the United States and Ukraine. And I have to do it because there's really no one else to do it right now. There aren't people who are knowledgeable enough, whether it be in the press or anywhere else around us that can do it, so I have to. But it's certainly going to be more than just talking about the president. Johnson's Law, as you know, is the concept that in an obscure country like Ukraine, the press, politicians can say whatever they want, whether they're deliberately lying or just making a mistake, because they don't know enough. There's so few people out there who can answer them that they get away with anything. And it shouldn't surprise you that the attack on Donald Trump has occurred in a very obscure country, at least as far as Americans are concerned, as Ukraine. I mean, Russia would have worked too. But just like in 2014, the incompetence is shocking. It's fun to laugh at these people. The average journalist is not an expert in any particular policy area. If you come out of a university with a degree in journalism, I'm not entirely sure why they wouldn't just get a degree in political science or law or literature. I'm not sure what even they do in a journalist department. You would think the one thing that they would have to know to be a journalist is to be an expert in a certain policy area so they can write about it. But they're not. Whether it be academic jobs or jobs for a newspaper or something like CNN, they're rare. mainstream journalism is losing a lot of money. They won't change their format. They won't change their bias, of course. They'd rather lose money than do that. But these jobs are rare, but they're very lucrative and prestigious, and therefore they're a vulnerable group of people. They will do anything to keep those positions. Years of the hard-bitten foreign correspondent, as I've said many times, are long over. At least some of those guys had a certain expertise in a particular area. But of all of the made-up stories against the current president, and however many dozen there have been, this is probably the worst. You see, after 3 years, I still don't know what Russiagate really is. It's never been explained. Or I should put it like this, that there's no, the explanations that I've heard contradict each other. The claim was never made that somehow the Russian government or people working for the Russian government hacked into the mainframe system of a voting machine and changed the result. That was never ever at any point the claim. Just like here in the Ukraine situation, that anything that Donald Trump is being accused of is wrong. It's the assumption that people are so ignorant, which of course they are, is such that they just will say it and it will be assumed to be true. The funny thing is, of course, that Russiagate and the Ukraine situation are contradictory to one another. You would think that the left would have something, some actual issue to worry about. But, you know, maybe this is a blessing in disguise, that this is just a distraction. The left being focused on this kind of thing, they can mandate federal funds to force transsexuals to teach at military academies or preschools. So maybe this is a positive thing. Now the stories, all of these scandals, the story is always changing. But here's what I can gather so far. Journalists have stumbled upon a phone conversation between Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump concerning, among other things, military aid to Ukraine. Now, the problems with that right away are many, because I was told for 3 years that Donald Trump was pro-Russian, even more than that. So now he's talking about military aid to Russia's enemy, or at least the government is Russia's enemy. And of course, no one in the American press has noticed that this is a contradiction. Ukraine and Russiagate cannot be true at the same time. The Democratic Party, which is now embarrassed that Joe Biden, son Hunter, was let off the hook in a corruption scandal. You have a media who knows nothing about the situation over there, switched gears and took the scandal that should affect the Bidens and blamed it on Trump somehow. The allegations stem from a whistleblower of some type that actually didn't hear the call. Now, that's irrelevant, because whether or not the whistleblower even exists doesn't matter. If she didn't exist, the press would have to invent one. Either way, the story wouldn't change. So the president is accused of withholding military aid, and I can hardly say that with a straight face, from Kiev, pending the reopening of an investigation into Burisma Holdings, which is among other things, a company that oversees some natural gas distribution in the country. Now, somehow, Hunter Biden was on the board of directors. Now, that by itself, you know, Hunter Biden is a lawyer out of both Georgetown and Yale. His grades weren't very good, but of course he was forced in. And was involved in some sort of corruption. This has all been covered up in the American press. Joe Biden has threatened the Ukrainian government, which of course is a product of Washington and is a colonial satrapy rather than a government in any normal sense of the term. Back then, either you end the investigation or else. But since it's an American colony, they can dictate these kind of things. Now, That's Nancy Pelosi now, the leader of the House, is the head of this impeachment committee. But her son also sits on the board of directors of VisCoil. Now, he lied, Paul Pelosi Jr., saying he was going over to Ukraine to promote youth soccer, which, of course, is a huge issue in that dying society. And he visited Ukraine in 2017 to meet with the administration for some kind of business venture, one in which he had absolutely no experience or ability. The kid, actually neither kid, has ever had a worthwhile job or really worked a day in their lives. So now, and in both cases, these two trust fund brats have been in a natural gas company, which is one of the most corrupt in Ukrainian economy. And even Pelosi appeared in one of their commercials. Now, I immediately thought to myself that maybe putting random rich American kids on boards of directors might be one of the reasons that the Ukrainian economy barely exists today. But between 2004 and 2014, American and European banks took over the Ukrainian economy entirely, running it as a very, very poorly managed colony. And so they can do things like this, snap their fingers and get whoever they want, put on board any organization they feel like. Now, the very fact that the U.S. grants military aid to the long-failed Ukrainian state shows both the incompetence and the corruption of the executive branch in America. And remember, keep in mind that this entire thing comes from the ill-advised meddling of the United States, who, through their own admission, created this chaos in Ukraine. Now, Joe Biden himself threatened to withhold, at the time, about $1 billion in loan guarantees. In other words, loans that can't come from a bank. When Ukraine will default on them, which they always do, the American taxpayer is on the hook for it. That's why these banks could give money to a non-existent economy, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, knowing that they'll never see that money again, because the U.S. has guaranteed the loans to the Export-Import Bank in D.C., and therefore, when they default over a certain period of time, the American taxpayer is forced to pay for it. The prosecutor's name was Viktor Shokin, and this is in 2016, and he was in charge of investigating Burisma Holdings. Now, the American press actually makes the argument that they've really gone wild here when this came out. I read the BuzzFeed article. Now, BuzzFeed, remember, is a comedy site with zero understanding of anything here, including comedy, that what Biden said specifically, he was at a Council on Foreign Relations meeting back then, and it's on film, and he said, and this is him speaking, he said, "I looked at them," and he's referring to Ukrainian satraps, and said, "All right, I'm leaving here in 6 hours. If that prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." "Well, son of a bitch," and he laughs, "he got fired." And they put in place someone who was solid at the time. And that's what Biden said. There's no question about the truth of the matter. Now, the word solid means someone who will take orders. Now, again, Ukraine is a colony. It does not have an independent government. The government cannot function without American money and American support. So, you know, a so-called prosecutor is someone who's working for the Americans anyway. But there's still a few independent-minded people, and the press was saying that the prosecution was falling off to begin with. That is not relevant because it really shouldn't have happened in the first place. Of course, the corruption is day-to-day. I mean, Ukrainian, both private and public sectors are corrupt. There's no pristine part of the government that can investigate any of this because they're all in the same boat. You can't be a part of the Ukrainian elite without being on the take, because there are no institutions. there are no functioning institutions in Ukraine. And remember, you know, not only are these guaranteed loans, but most of the banks that's part of the IMF, and the IMF is a consortium of banks, have representatives on the Federal Reserve, and of course they will bail them out. I don't know if you've heard, but the Federal Reserve is pumping something like between $10 and $15 trillion into the stock market over the next 5 years. So it really doesn't make any difference. And of course, we're on the hook for all of that. So that's essentially the story. Now, Donald Trump, in this conversation with the new Ukrainian president, said, I would like to see that investigation revitalized. And if you don't, he allegedly said, this $250 million in military aid will not be sent. Now, I don't see a problem so far. Trump, for whatever motivation, is demanding that Ukraine begin looking at itself objectively, which, of course, in 2019 is a pipe dream. But that's the story. That's the claim. CNBC, I saw on YouTube, I think, 2 or 3 days ago, maybe a little bit more than that, they said that they quoted a poll that a huge portion of the American population wants this investigation and Donald Trump to go forward. And I wrote in the comments, I said, most Americans don't know where Ukraine is. Now, as you know, polls are political weapons. It began with the attacks on Clarence Thomas during his confirmation hearing. Polls were used and to manipulate opinion, not reflect it. There's no law that says a poll company has to be honest or even give the proper numbers. No one goes to jail if they lie and make up a story. And the Clinton administration, in particular, used polls, invented or otherwise, to change public opinion. So this is pretty laughable. Now, the system often needs buzzwords to explain more or less complex subjects to a befuddled population. In this case, the buzzword is quid pro quo. Now, they think that when they utter that, they've said something profound. But they have no idea really what it is. By using a Latin phrase, they've bamboozled the public into thinking that they've something of outstanding gravity. And of course, the phrase means something in exchange for something. Pro is the preposition for. Exchange is implied, as is else. The word quo often means place, but it could also mean in order that. Quid usually means what, referring to an object. It refers to the fact that the thing involved is an actual thing. In legal terms, a consideration. A contractual consideration is the object under that has value. So the phrase means that the consideration, whatever it is granted in order that something different can be granted as a result. So from what I can gather, these journalists in the American media and other scholars of the Latin language think it's illegal to use foreign aid as a weapon against the government. And that somehow the Constitution makes that claim, which they probably believe. Now, foreign aid wouldn't exist unless it could be used this way. That's what foreign aid is. I mean, is the assumption here that foreign aid is motivated by altruism with no strategic issue? Foreign aid isn't just thrown around, but is, by its very structure, a strategic weapon. Strings are always attached. In fact, another term for string is quid. Not literally, of course. But of course, strings don't make the reader or the speaker sound as erudite as quid. That's exactly what a string is when you say strings are always attached. Quid is always just that. So, as you might imagine, the latest attack on Trump is an invented, made-up issue over nothing. And still, it comes down to leftist anger that the voters rejected them despite massive vote fraud obsessive media bias, and 4 assassination attempts, not to mention physical intimidation and violence against Trump's supporters. So this is American politics in 2019, which by itself should convert most thinking people to becoming monarchists. And I want to note that when a military takes over a government, like it had in Latin America in the 70s and 80s, the government usually is at this level of incompetence and stupidity and corruption when this happens. Now, I'm not advocating that for America, since the military is, in fact, probably worse than the civilian population. Now, in this same phone conversation, Trump says, he asks, why isn't Germany, why isn't France, why aren't those countries paying? And he's referring to, of course, assistance to Ukraine, which he's not supposed to be in favor of in the first place, but that's an issue they don't mention. Now, the better question, of course, is why anyone's paying at all, or why anyone will ever see this cash again, and why would you give money to a country that's not really a country that doesn't have an economy or any real economic institutions? Or who's receiving this aid? Where is it going? And why haven't the billions given every year to this basket case ever been used properly or ever seen again? So Trump says, and why are we paying all the time? No one's given, I believe, more to Ukraine. You know, Obama used to send pillows and sheets. I sent anti-tank weapons and lots of other things to Ukraine. Again, I'm saying to myself, Ukraine is using those weapons, well, allegedly, it's not going to the military because the military has no real chain of command anymore, on this long-lost war against Novorossiya. Novorossiya, Donbass, Luhansk, and Donetsk. But did the press know this? Because the Russiagate claims that this scandal can't exist at the same time. So they just assume that the average American knows so little that they can just get away with this blatant contradiction. I mean, just go ask the guy in the street, ask him what Novorossiya is, and see what answer you get. So it didn't take very long for the fact checkers, who are just kids with a laptop, claiming that the EU gives more money or weaponry, whatever it is, to this non-existent government. But again, Johnson's law is operative here. They could have said that lemons are the main source of aid to Kiev, and that citrus fruits are the evidence of Trump's collusion with Russia to win the Latvian election of 2003. I mean, they could say that, and most people would have no way of arguing this one way or the other. So Donald admits that he spoke of the Biden issue with Zelensky, but he denies withholding military aid in exchange for the investigation. But why deny this? Had he done so, he would have done nothing wrong. In fact, it would have been a problem if he didn't make that condition. Because the dingbat Hunter Biden had no right to A, be on the board of that company, B, do what he did to get investigated, look the other way while other people were doing those kind of things, and C, have his father threaten Kiev to back off from bringing the trust fund brat to justice. But at the moment, Joe Biden remained without spot so far, showing, of course, just how honest, rational, and forthright the outrage against Trump must be. So, I guess it was last week, the Justice Department released a summary of Trump's call, and the press was scouring it, trying to find something, some vague or indirect piece of evidence that they could use, and they failed. But knowing that no one's actually going to read this thing, they said they found it anyway. There was no quid pro quo negotiations on July 25th. And it made me laugh when I heard that Zelensky used the phrase drain the swamp, given his own administration. But, of course, he gave no indication how he would do this, since he would need to use one part of the swamp to drain the rest, which, of course, is a contradiction. So Trump talks about the American generosity to Ukraine, which is odd, again, given the Russiagate claims. And Zelensky says that they're going to purchase more Javelin missiles. Now, that refers to the FGM-148, which is a fairly inexpensive shoulder-launched anti-tank and anti-helicopter weapon that uses imaging infrared sensors for accuracy. The TOW system uses a wire. So when you shoot it, you kind of have to stand still and have the wire that will guide the thing. In this case, you could shoot it and immediately take cover. So Kiev last year, or someone in Kiev, used American aid money, I guess, because that's the only money they have, to buy 32 of these. Of course, there's no confirmation of any delivery because the Ukrainian military has no functional chain of command. So the way it works is that the phrase Javelin missile is scary, that the average American will be frightened by this and just assume something terrible is going on. And on this basis, they'll agree that some impeachment is needed, whatever they think that might be. But they will not wonder why Trump wants Ukraine to blow up the tanks of its pro-Russian enemies all of a sudden, given that they've been told for 3 years that Trump is Putin's puppet. And he says, I'd like you to find out what happened with the whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you, one of your wealthy people, the server, they say Ukraine has it. And then, of course, Trump says, expressing the fear that Zelensky is surrounding himself with some of these same people. Well, of course, he's right. You know, Zelensky is a fairly weak politician, and he would have to depend on the money of billionaires and their media empires to even be noticed, let alone elected to anything. CrowdStrike, I'm not sure if even Trump knew that at the time, but it's a cybersecurity contractor, and they ran the Democratic National Committee service in 2016. And because they had failed to keep Hillary Clinton from hacking the system, her people from hacking the system, and taking all money that was given to the DNC to her campaign, which of course is stealing it. You give money to the DNC, you're not necessarily giving money to Hillary. You had Bernie supporters and people like that sending money to the committee, and Hillary just assumes this is all for me anyway, so she hacks the system, and that money is all funneled to her campaign. Now, CrowdStrike is embarrassed, and if they weren't in on it, and so somehow the DNC and that company invented the whole story that Russians, some vague, you know, Russians, whatever they think that is, hacked the system. And over a short period of time, that led to people thinking that the Russians stole the election. And that led to people thinking that they were going to shut down the power grid and everything else that the press was engaged in that first few months. So Trump's demand was that, and you know, really the reader, you know, you think of the average American trying to read this stuff. He's making reference to the fact that CrowdStrike never permitted the FBI to examine the actual server. I'm not sure if CrowdStrike, off the top of my head, is an American company. Because if that were the case, they, you know, if they were an American company, it would be a different story. But Trump speculates that it's in the hands of one of the oligarchs, all of whom are very close to the regime, including in the U.S., including the CIA. But the media has no idea about any of this. But given the close connection between the CIA and USAID and the Ukrainian oligarchy, they could get their hands on it in probably 5 seconds. But of course, I'm sure it's been quote unquote lost. So Pelosi, who's not really an expert on anything, used this conveniently obscure issue to announce the beginning of an impeachment inquiry, accusing Trump of seriously violating the Constitution. Now, I'm also sure that Pelosi knows nothing about the Constitution, and I'm not entirely sure what part of it talks about foreign aid. It says nothing about this, and in fact, if anything, is totally silent on the concept that the presidency has the power to use public money in this regard at all. So the issue is suitably vague enough and completely outside of the average, even educated Americans' thought process, that they could pretty much invent anything, and because it's so obscure, people just have to accept it. Now, for some reason that I can't quite figure out, the Judiciary Committee of the House subpoenaed Trump's former campaign manager, Lewandowski. Now, I have no idea what a campaign manager would have to do with a phone call over military aid, I suppose it's all that they can get at the time. And because of all this, he made fun of the proceedings. And because he didn't immediately tell the Democrats what they wanted to hear, he was condemned in the press without mercy. So if anything, if there's an issue here, it broke in 2014. Now, at this point, let me do what no one else is going to do, as always, and give you a history as to why I say what I'm saying. Now, I've made the claim that there is no functional Ukrainian economy. There is no functional Ukrainian currency. There is no functional Ukrainian government or military. Why do I say that? Oh, and by the way, I have yet another new book coming out in partnership with Russia Insider. And we're going to be, it's simply called Ukrainian Nationalism. It's a book I wrote in 2015 on the history of Ukrainian nationalism from Hetman Mazepa all the way up until the overthrow of Yanukovych. And in it, of course, I deal with, you know, later parts of the book. This is, you know, from essentially Peter the Great on what happened to Ukraine after 1991. And that's relevant to everything I'm saying here. 1991, Ukraine declares independence from disintegrating Soviet Union. And there was an election that the United States created and financed where Elena Kravchuk won. I remember this very well, with 62% of the vote. Anybody who could possibly run for office had to have been a member of the party at one time or another. He wasn't much of a politician. He didn't, you know, no one actually had to run for office up until that point. And remember, being a member of the party does not imply any familiarity with Marxist doctrine. So because Ukraine was organized economically as a piece of the Soviet Union, it really had no ability to function outside of that system. The economy is completely oriented to Russia, and of course she had no military forces of her own. He lost the election in 1994, and he maintained really a minimal agenda, because at the time agendas didn't make any sense anyway. You didn't have any party platforms. You had no experience of this kind of thing at the time. Any platform was written in Washington, D.C. or New York City. So this so-called independent Ukraine was already in the process of disintegration. He banned the KGB, which of course was very popular at the time, but no one was quite sure where the new Ukrainian intelligence force would come from. So, you know, this is off to a very bad start, and Leonid Kuchma was elected in 1994. And at the time, Ukraine was disappearing. So-called free markets were a very cruel joke, since the free market doesn't make any sense when your competition, that is to say foreign companies, have been at this for a century or centuries. Just like in Russia and elsewhere, the economy melted down. Now, Kuchma did put up some respectable numbers. 2003, the GDP increased by 9%, 16% increase in industrial output, increase in wages. That was nowhere near what they had lost, though. I mean, wages increased by 23% the next year, in 2004. Actually, 2004. And this is nothing more than recouping the losses of the 1990s. But going back to the 90s, you know, in 1995, fixed asset investment was 30% lower than in 1994. But when Putin took over Russia, Ukraine's fixed capital investment increased by 20%, since Ukraine's trade was overwhelmingly with Russia. So long as Kuchma was in charge, you had some economic development. It still was nothing compared to what was lost in the 1990s, but there was some improvement. Now, as you know, in 2004, the CIA organized a coup against him, where they claimed election rigging and everything else. And but so 2006 was the last year of growth. But that was a holdover from the previous year. The Western banks and capitalist predators had descended on a helpless country. Economic growth was then a thing of the past. You know, in 1994, Kuchma was paralyzed. The liquidation of 50% of the Ukrainian economy by local and Western speculators and oligarchs, which shipped most of this off to European banks and to pay debt. In 1993 alone, a full 20% of the Ukrainian economy was liquidated, which means it was rendered in liquid form and taken out of the country. So, you know, this was normal. In the 1990s, most of the economy was liquidated entirely. There was a bit of recovery a bit later, for a very short period of time. But as you know, 2014, you yet had another coup, this time a violent coup. And the second coup, the minute they took over, they sold off a full 25% of the remaining GDP to foreigners. Even the first coup, 2004, and now 2015, you're talking about 2015, unemployment was roughly 50%. Youth unemployment has been like 80%. Steel, produced in the East, was the only thing making any money. And it accounted by itself, it accounted for 40% of the country's exports, all, of course, to Russia and parts of China. Russia mostly. So, because of all this, you simply don't have any functional economy. And when the coup took over 2014, 2015, you immediately had massive tax increases and utility rate increases in terms of paying for water and electricity. Those bills went up 50%, the average household. Pensions went into an absolute free fall. The currency, the hryvnia, just bottomed out entirely. And the point of the coup in 2014 was to liquidate the economy and anything that was profitable, anything that could possibly be liquidated, and ship it off to Western creditors. Because the Easterners would not permit that in the steel industry and the coal industry out there. That's what developed into the Civil War, which they won. Now, in 2014, when the coup took over, the first thing that happened was that both the IMF and the U.S. released $4.6 billion without any conditions, essentially a payoff to the people who took over the government. Of course, immediately, of that $4.6 billion, $3.7 billion was returned immediately in the form of interest payments. So I don't see the point of this. But remember, these aren't actual dollar bills. These are simply blips on a computer screen. The minute these people took over in 2014, the economy fell by 10% in the basic sectors. What little industrial production occurred, there was a massive decrease of 10%, construction by 21%, and of course retail trade by 10%. So you have, you know, money going to a non-existent economy, because by between the 90s and now, anything that was productive, except in the Far East, of course, which is not under government control, was liquidated. And what does exist there, of course, is foreign owned. You know, you have people, a few years ago, the spokesman for the IMF was Christine Lagarde. She made a comment to Le Monde and, she said, and she quoted, she said, today, the theories, she's referring to Ukrainian liberal development, they're no longer tenable. We're developing new opinions, giving Kyiv more time to develop a reformist system. It's likely the financial commitments Ukraine must have, it must be higher than expected. Depends on the situation in the East. This is a priority today. The IMF cannot be expected to support the reform if a full 20% of the GDP might not exist tomorrow. The relationship between economics and the military situation in the East is very clear. And it got worse. The school system began to shut down. the healthcare system shut down. Citizens have to pay about 80% of all of their medical care. And as always, everything that the journalists said, everything that the Western academics said, was absolutely false and completely fraudulent. Everything that they said was wrong. So this is why, of course, I state, I've been stating for years, that from 1994 to, you know, roughly 2015, the economy was simply liquidated. There's no faith that anything's going to change. The currency has no value. And the only thing that the country functions on is foreign aid and American companies setting up shop over there. But as far as Ukrainian-owned profitable industries, they simply don't exist. The Ukrainian government exists because the West supports them. And they support them because they can serve, to some extent, as a bulwark against Russia. But even now, because the Ukrainian military had fallen to pieces in the Civil War of 2014-2015, even this is not a possibility. And plenty of bankers and plenty of politicians who know have had enough of this and don't see any return for their investments. But at the very least, people like Pelosi and Biden can have their kids, it's a playground for these people. So if there's really any issue here, it broke in 2014. The EU was iffy on, essentially the American plan to simply take over the country. Just before the riots that overthrew the government, Yanukovych permitted the physical sale of both parts of Western in Ivano-Frankivsk in the far west and parts of the east to be bought by Amoco and Shell. And they actually bought them. It was a 99-year lease. They actually owned and had full police powers over these areas. There were going to be fracking on both sides, and which takes such a ridiculous amount of water. And they were given full control over the natural resources of the country. Very few people were I was the only one talking about this at the time, as far as I remember. And they were given full control over police forces in their areas and full control over all the water resources of the country. When the riots start in 2014, the government is overthrown. They cleared out. But all that meant was that the entire country was then put under receivership from Western banks. And of course, if you remember, Victoria Nuland had condemned the European Union at the time and admitted everything I'm saying here right now. And it was a conversation with U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Piat, who were discussing a way to end the crisis in Ukraine by, of course, putting the country under receivership. Now, this was focused on, at the time, the violence that had broken out between Viktor Yanukovych just before the riots of 2014. And what he had done is made an offer to put the guy who the coup plotters put into place, Arseny Yatsenyuk, who is Jewish and the son of a rabbinical family, to make him the prime minister, and the boxer, Vitaly Klitschko, deputy prime minister. And she said in this phone conversation, she said, "I don't think Klitschko should go into government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea." And that's what Victoria Nuland said. And Piat, the ambassador, said, "Well, in terms of him not going into government, just let him stay out and do his political homework," is what he said. And he said, "In terms of the process moving forward, we want to keep the moderate Democrats together." Now, the significance of this recorded phone call has been uploaded to YouTube, is to show that these people were essentially rebuilding the country as they saw fit. In other words, it's not an independent country anymore. Now, Klitschko is significant here because he ran a party, believe it or not, called European Capital, which would soon merge into Poroshenko's bloc. Now, that party, just to give an example of you know, the colonial relationship here, his party really represented nobody. It was financed by the German Christian Democratic Union and received its cast mostly from the Konrad Adenauer Foundation, according to Der Spiegel. And that newspaper said the point was, quote, to set up Klitschko purposely as a new strongman in Kiev in order to counter the Kremlin's growing influence. There's no question that every aspect of the political system there is controlled by the West, and these parties are invented by Western powers and financed by them. And Der Spiegel says that the support there was logistical and training, joint organization. And they changed its name. European Capital was just too blatant. They changed its name. And there was an organization formed by Timoshenko and George Soros called the Dictatorship Resistance Committee. And all of this, of course, not only Der Spiegel said this, but Interfax Ukraine in 2012 made this claim too. You know, Klitschko, according to the police inspector Mykola Chichin, said that he was an enforcer for the mafia boss Viktor Rybalko, actually a debt collector. That's a job for which he's far more suited than politics. When the coup took place, the riots took over the government in 2014, all the investigations were dropped. And of course, Klitschko is a member of the Washington, D.C. International Republican Institute and spends most of his time in Germany anyway. So when I say government in Ukraine or even economy in Ukraine, it's a misnomer. The problem with Yanukovych up until 2014 is that on occasion he functioned like an independent leader. And once the selling of two sides of Ukraine to Shell and Amoco, he had learned his lesson. And once the coup overthrew him, the Ukraine was then absorbed into the Western, very much like Kosovo was a few years ago, into the Western regime. So in no way is this an independent state. And one of the more obnoxious aspects of all of this is that as the Ukrainian military fell to pieces, the Ukrainian high command invented the story that Russia had invaded in the east. And if you go to the newspaper, even Wikipedia acts like this is an established fact. Strange, though, because an invasion usually is somewhat of a public event. You think of an invasion, you think of, you know, lines of tanks, your planes, APCs, entering towns, traveling en masse down public roads and everything else. But apparently, no one had a camera on them when the Russian army smashed through Ukrainian territory. So I believe this is the first time in world history that you had an invasion of a country that no one noticed. Or, on the other hand, maybe it didn't happen, and this is what the Ukrainian military said to save themselves from the humiliation of being humiliated by a ragtag group of not both national communist and national socialist forces in 2015. And I wrote, a few years ago, I wrote this. I wrote, mercenaries and nationalist militias condemned yesterday are financed today to fight Russia in the east. Much of the ragtag Ukrainian army, almost entirely financed by the U.S. taxpayer, has deserted. Senator Inhofe of Oklahoma used pictures of the war in Georgia on the Senate floor to claim that Russia has invaded Ukraine in hopes to spark a war with the U.S. The exposure of this fraud, of course, led to no repercussions of any kind. As the American citizen is told that there's no money for unemployment, education, or medical bills, the expenses of billionaire global elites, Ukrainian traders and mercenaries are paid instead. The neoconservative rejects all forms of welfare for Americans, but advocates spending a small fortune to keep thousands of parasites and militias, mercenary armies, settlers, or political activists in business. trying to justify, make the claim that the Russians had invaded the country. They were using pictures of the Russian army invading Georgia in 2008, because there are no pictures of any invasion of Ukraine, because there was no such thing. So what it comes down to is Ukraine, since independence, 1991-1992, really is a story of squandered potential, institutionalized corruption, and really pure immorality in the West. You know, but as a colony of the U.S. now, American elites can send their kids to the country in the same way the British elites would send their friends to political posts in the old empire of the 18th and 19th century. But this only adds to the comic mismanagement that's led to the destruction of what otherwise would have been a very, very successful and powerful Orthodox country. That this is the root, without question, of the present issue. I'll say now, and I've said many times before, that the only hope for Ukraine is a military coup that will then go to Russia and China for assistance and protection. They have to use then fairly harsh force to impose some kind of order on the society that could begin its rational development towards Eurasia, which is really its natural direction anyway. Russia and China would be more than ready to assist and invest once some kind of order and optimism are restored then. The educated and motivated population of the country will do the rest. And many of the migrants who've left the country, many, many millions actually, who've left the country, may well return. And if this isn't done, Ukraine is finished. Back in 2014, Jeffrey Piat, the ambassador, was the one who brought the cash to begin the campaign against Yanukovych. Radio Free Europe and the Western-controlled Ukrainian press, which was led by the Kiev Post, created the rumors of the Russian invasion. George Soros created the Ukrainian Crisis Media Center, as both the U.S. government, the EU, and private money went to building this so-called protest movement. The method of the private-public manipulation of media, the imagery, and even the language in these situations is well known, and there have been many great monographs published about this. Over and over again, these people will claim the revolutions are spontaneous, and the instant experts that are created by the system repeat the official line. So what happens is the Western elite mobilizes these urban privileged elements of the population, then uses their own organizers and media personnel, then create riots for the building of local organizations. They're granted cash, equipment, technology, even ideology and leadership that have a script to follow. And violence was, of course, encouraged. And strange people, really, you know, from 2014 onwards, you see people in these so-called government posts that have absolutely, again, the fact that this is a colonial entity. The people who've been given cabinet posts aren't Ukrainians. They're not even citizens. You know, the IMF and World Bank give these dire warnings about government policy, and yet they give billions of dollars anyway, knowing full well that they'll never see that money ever again, except through bailouts. But within a few months, so by the end of 2014, major media began leaking documents showing that, of course, they created it. And this is the nature of color revolution from Tiananmen Square to Kiev. By March of 2015, three cabinet ministers in the so-called Ukrainian government aren't Ukrainian, and they're not even citizens. One was a Lithuanian Jew, another was a Georgian, both educated in the United States. There were some Ukrainian nationalists that were used very briefly and then discarded. And then the so-called nationalist movement turns out to be anti-nationalist, and it was just a westernized secular front for oligarchy, claiming to be in favor of an independent Ukraine, knowing full well that it was nothing of the kind. So, how do you summarize this? Understanding the history, not just since 2014, but since really 1991, shows that, of course, there is no Ukraine in any normal sense of the term. Of course, the ethnicity exists. The church exists. There are many positive elements there. But economy exists at the black market level. or at the very least, if it's foreign-owned, that is to say, from a Western firm. The problem is now that, you know, the reason that Yanukovych refused to sign the EU treaty was that it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars just to get the Ukrainian economy in shape so as to reach the requirements for membership. Now, those requirements were thrown out the window for Bulgaria and Romania, but to sign that treaty would have just given over most of the country to the West. That was the whole purpose of it. Whatever debt, I mean, by the time 2014 rolls around, Ukraine owed about half its GDP in corporate debt to Western banks. Getting some of that money back required the complete liquidation of the country. And then the government ended up being just a dependent, often foreign, people who oversaw that process. So, of course, no one knows this in the press. The situation with Trump is a complete non-issue. There is no independent Ukrainian state that he was in contact with. Nothing happens there that doesn't have the okay of the U.S. government, which is exactly how someone like Joe Biden can keep a prosecutor from investigating his son or anyone else close to him. No doubt the exact same thing is the case with Nancy Pelosi's son, and who knows how many politicians have their children and friends and allies given positions over there, because everything over there now is short-term. There is no long-term planning because no one has any faith in the long-term. People don't think there is really going to be a functional society at all, let alone government, in a few years. Whatever exists that's making any money over there is foreign-owned. Very much like Germany after the Versailles Treaty, any Ukrainian-owned profitable organization is taken over. And this is how they pay their debt. So you don't have an independent country. There is no relationship between Washington, D.C. and Kiev like you would have between Washington, D.C. and Berlin, or Washington, D.C. and Moscow, or Washington, D.C. and Tokyo. That simply doesn't exist. Of course, these people don't know that. I've read the Constitution many thousands of times, don't recall any clause that says foreign aid has to be granted just for the sake of altruism. Because that's the claim here. It's no accident that, you know, most even well-educated Americans know nothing about the situation over there. Because if you're going to impeach Trump over something, it needs to be something about which the American press could pretty much say whatever it pleases. So there's really not going to be many people to contradict anything. So and there's not a whole lot, actually probably nobody in Donald Trump's cabinet who has any ability to answer any charges in this regard. But the entire purpose, I mean, the whole notion of military aid, would it be Ukraine or anybody else, has strings attached to it. You know, if the Javelin missile itself is made by Ford Aerospace, and the guidance system is created by Texas Instruments. Any foreign aid has to use American systems, American products, American shipping, American retail and credit interfaces. I mean, those are the strings that are attached to everything. There's no foreign aid package ever granted, except maybe Israel, that hasn't had these strings attached to it. That's what it is. So, yet again, just like with the Russiagate thing, which is in full contradiction to this, you're either pro-Russian or pro-Ukrainian. As far as governments are concerned, you can't be both. You can't withhold military aid to a non-existent military. You can't talk about aid to a independent government that's not independent. They may have legal standing, but they have the same legal standing that Ukraine had when it was a part of the Soviet Union. Remember, according to the UN, Ukraine was an independent country that had a vote in the General Assembly, as did all the Warsaw Pact states. That means the Soviets were able to vote like 10 times in any given issue because the fiction that these countries were independent was accepted. And the same thing with Ukraine now. Rather than being a colony of the Soviet Union, it is a direct colony of the United States. just like Kosovo is a direct colony of the EU. The legality of the matter doesn't matter. In practical terms, and in really every term except the most formal, Ukraine is a extension of both American and, to a lesser extent, European capital. And that includes media, that includes military. The military is mostly mercenaries anyway. So this is the nature of the situation in Ukraine. And the claims against Trump will not be answered in this way. You don't have anybody who knows how to do that. And so the most shocking ignorance you're going to hear in the Western press, and it was very painful to me for me to read this stuff, just like it was in 2004, just like it was in 2014, and it's going to get worse now, because the only thing anyone cares about is destroying Trump. So they'll make up all kinds of stuff. And people like Klitschko, who you know live in the West, all these guys are educated in the West, and they're they could easily be mobilized, and God knows what they'll be able to say in any kind of proceedings, if in fact they use guys like that. They're all dependent on West for their income, for their standing in the world. All of these so-called parties, except for, you know, the pro-Russian ones, are created in Washington, D.C. So they can be brought in, God knows what they may say, if this actually goes forward. Anyway, that's the depressing news for now. But at least now you know in a thumbnail sketch of what's really going on and why you should be mocking this on a regular basis. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.